Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, crew, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I have got another quick read for you today. I've got one by, author is Matt Stevenson. Obviously, I will link to his page and Twitter. But this one is one that I have been looking for a good article on this topic specifically, and I think it hits a couple of different things that I've read on it that I really wanted to cover. I actually read, had a group of three different, like, small things, a Twitter thread, and some other details that I wanted to read on this. But this article, I think, does a pretty good job of kind of hitting all three of the things that I wanted to touch on. And then we'll expand on this quite a bit. But if you have not heard of it, there is a new, it's hard to call it a scam because it's not actually dishonest. They're completely open about how the smart contract works and everything that's going on, but it is definitely a, as this article puts it, it's called dangerous game theory. I won't go any further into it. We'll just hit off with this article. And again, it's by Matt Stevenson, and it's titled Ethereum, FOMO 3D, and Dangerous Game Theory. FOMO 3D is a blockchain game that currently has $12 million in Ethereum at stake, with all of it locked up in a very bizarre-looking set of rules. But upon closer inspection, the rules aren't so strange. In fact, it turns out to resemble a scaled-up version of a classic game in behavioral game theory. They teach it at Harvard Business School. This game, underlying FOMO 3D, or F3D, is called the War of Attrition, and it can produce some insanely irrational outcomes. Fortunately, variants of the War of Attrition have been extensively studied by economists and evolutionary biologists. Here are some core findings. 1. Winning, quote-unquote, pays $0 in expectation. 2. Human beings tend to play terribly and lose. Part 2 of this article gets a little more technical about how smart contracts can solve War of Attrition games, but let's describe it here using the first lesson you get in a Harvard Business School professor's negotiations class. It's originally from Martin Shubik. At HBS, Professor Max Bozerman auctions off a normal $20 bill to the highest bidder, but with one catch. The second place bidder has to pay too. Consider what you would do in this situation. Max waves a $20 bill and offers it for sale starting at the low price of $1. Would you bid? Take a second and think about it. Did you bid? Of course you did. Who wouldn't pay $1 to get $20? So we all bid, and we follow the same logic next round. After all, who wouldn't pay $2 to get $20? But eventually something funny happens. Who wouldn't pay $2 to get $20 gets bid up until it becomes who wouldn't pay $19 to get $20, which then, of course, becomes who wouldn't pay $20 to get $20? And this is where you can really feel the force of the second bidder pays two issue. Let's say you have bid $19. If the auction stops now, you'll get the $20 and make $1. But let's not forget about competitive Carl, the second highest bidder. Carl bid $18 right before you bid. And so if the auction ends now, he has to pay anyway. So for Carl, the choice is to bid for a chance to break even or simply choose to lose $18. So Carl bids. The high bid is now $20. It's your turn. Did you bid $21 for a $20 bill in this situation? Of course you did. If you don't bid, you'll pay $19 and get nothing. If you bid $21, you at least might get the $20. That's the hook. At each turn, it feels like you're paying an additional dollar to get $20, and because of that, you'll bid more than the $20, and so will Carl, and so on. Eventually, one of you will have to walk to the front of the class and pay some crazily high amount for a $20 bill. It's no different at Harvard, where everyone who's been foolish enough to play this game has gotten a raw deal on the $20. In fact, there are documented cases of business people paying $2,000 for the $20 bill in this game. I'll quote from Northwestern professor J. Keith Murnaghan, who describes how that escalation happened in a class he taught in Hong Kong. Quote, "Even at $400, there was no pause in the bidding at all. Members of the class were screaming for the bidders to stop, but amid the general tumult, they took no heed. When the bids reached $700, my knees were shaking. When we reached $2,000, they finally stopped bidding. The class was in a total uproar. Everyone was stunned." End quote. The two warring bidders owed the professor a total of $4,000 for the $20 bill. The, quote, "winner" was a CEO who described his strategy as an ego-driven disaster. The loser said that everything was a blur to him, and that his pulse and blood pressure remained up for another hour after the class ended. Meanwhile, the professor who made the 200x return on a $20 bill described getting a, quote, "sporty imported car." Footnote, that's a real quote, but the professor actually donated the money to charity. End footnote. The point is that this is a deeply human sort of insanity. The people who didn't bid got to watch this drama play out, surely feeling smug. We should mention that, technically, they didn't make the right decision either. Game theory can be weird like that. Footnote. To see why bidding $0 isn't optimal, let's assume that everyone plays that way. Well, obviously, if everyone plays $0, then you should bid $1 and make $19. A Nash equilibrium needs to have no incentives to defect. But what if you bid $20? If you do that, you make $0, but nobody else has a reason to bid. So trading identical $20 works, but keeping the same $20 doesn't. Game theory is cool. Also, down here in the fine print, let's note that there should also be a mixed strategy equilibrium that yields an expected payoff of $0 and makes your opponents indifferent over their choices. And furthermore, I should be clear that the Harvard Business School game doesn't make the second place bidder pay all of their bids in sum. They instead pay the max. End footnote. But they're pretty much right. You can't do consistently better than zero. You can't do better than zero, but humans manage to do consistently worse. Humans overbid, sometimes ruinously, as we saw. The various behavioral factors like loss aversion, inequity aversion, negative reciprocity, etc., take over. But to explain the truly extreme results, like $2,000, we probably have to reach for the big guns, like René Girard's theory of mimetic competition or something. Footnote. In Girard's theory, the $20 would become vastly more valuable to each participant simply because it was valued by a rival. Funny enough, in the professor's account of these events, it turns out that the professor was even scapegoated for, quote, changing the rules of the game. He forced students to bid in increments of $50 once the price reached a certain amount. End footnote. Either way, we are in the land of behavioral game theory, where utility functions get weird. But back to FOMO 3D. In F3D, you buy a key to win the prize. Currently, $12 million, which gets handed out in 24 hours. As long as nobody else buys a key before time runs out, you'll win the prize. But if someone else buys one, the timer is bumped higher, and the whole process starts again with them in the lead. At its core, FOMO 3D appears to be a war of attrition game, like the $20 auction is. Footnote. We are omitting some bells and whistles, as far as we can tell. For instance, there is also a dividend option in FOMO 3D, but this appears to be a secondary phenomenon. That is, you wouldn't buy a dividend unless you thought people would bid, so this is a, quote, greater fool strategy. It's as if the Northwestern professor told the other professors in the department that he would cut them in on his profits. It's only a good idea if clever Christina doesn't achieve the common knowledge smart contract solution. If he did, you'd lose $19. Thanks to Reddit user Questionable Politics for reminding us to include this. End footnote. The crucial part is that the amount you lose when someone else buys a key gets added to the $12 million. As a result of that, you can get it back by rebidding and winning. This is the familiar psychological mechanism that we saw with the $20 auction games. More precisely, the dynamics of F3D are probably better described as an all-pay auction with an endogenous prize value, but the takeaway is the same. F3D's underlying model targets fundamental exploits in human behavior, and this is true whether their solidity code is good or not. So how do you win attrition games? One way is to parameterize the behavioral utility functions of your opponents and set a mixed strategy bid profile that leaves them indifferent between bidding and not bidding. Don't worry if you didn't get that. You can also just not play and get the same expected result, $0. Beyond that, having only taken a cursory look at the code, we can offer only general ideas. But the good news is that it seems to us like a commitment strategy should be available, and smart contracts are incredible tools for this. For instance, someone could write a publicly viewable contract that funds a bot bidding in the final second before the price is released. And this would seem to eliminate the incentives of those bidding before or after, since those bids would be guaranteed to fail. The analogous version for our $20 game is as follows. Imagine if Clever Christina wrote an auto-executing program, funded by a smart contract, that would automatically outbid anyone in the class up to $1 million. She sets it to bid first at $1, and then she publicly destroys the private key. What is your optimal response? It's to do nothing. Such a contract would have to take better account of the specifics of F3D players and devs and their long-run and, quote, metagame payoff functions. But the basic idea seems correct. But in theory, Christina could get the same commitment even if she wrote the contract such that it refunds the remainder of the $1 million back into her wallet, conditional on her winning. But even if it's a money-losing gambit, it may be worth it for the community to fund a Christina anyway, so long as we assume that F3D imposes negative externalities on the Ethereum network, and perhaps on the reputation of blockchain more broadly. Then ending it, even at some cost, could provide a net benefit to some person or entity. Another solution, suggested by Justin Drake, is that miners could collude in such a way to, quote, win the game by updating the block such that they win. It's a clever idea, but we suspect that this is a less desirable outcome, since that would itself produce a negative externality in the possible loss of credibility for Ethereum. At any rate, we think it's reasonable to expect more of these games, given the success of FOMO 3D. It will be especially interesting if smart contracts can be the cure. I discuss this further and get a bit more specific in an informal part 2 here. All right, and there we have it. That was our part 1 of a 2-part, but I don't think... I actually have not read the second part. I just kind of went digging about FOMO 3D, and... honestly, if the second part is really good, and everybody seems to like this episode. I may jump into it as well, but I just kind of wanted to cover the idea of dangerous game theory and just FOMO 3D in general. Again, this was by Matt Stevenson, and I'll link to both his page and Twitter, and as well as Hacker Noon, which is the publication on Medium that this was released under. But FOMO 3D, if you've not been to the website is called exitscam.me. That's the URL. And if you go, they've even got a wiki. They're very open about how this smart contract works and all the pieces that are involved. And I think it's actually, I think the real important stuff is actually covered in the article, that it's really just a war of attrition game, in combination with a Ponzi scheme, because there is actually a dividend mechanism that's labeled, instead of F3D, the quote-unquote dividend portion is P3D. They've included like a competitive like team set where if one team wins, the payout pays differently. Like let's say Team Snek, they've got Snek, Bear, or Snek, Bull, Bear, and Whale. So Team Snek is the one that pays out the most to the dividend holders. Whereas Team Bear pays out nothing to the dividend holders. So it's got a competitive element of, like, whose team are you on? And let's make sure our team wins so that I'm getting at least some of my money back or some payout. And then it leaves a way to, it's got another element, is there's even referral links if you're one of the P3D holders. So you can actually get people to refer, because anybody, the quote-unquote dividends that are involved, are, oh, I'm going to get in early on this Ponzi scheme, and 10% of anybody who joins one of the dividend teams, the 10% of all of their key purchases get paid out and divided up into dividends to everybody who has bought keys before them. So there's so many little elements of like incentivizing people to drag more people into the Ponzi scheme, which is kind of the basis of a Ponzi scheme anyway. But if you drag people in with your referral link, rather than their 10% tax, quote unquote, going to the entire group, it goes straight to you. So it's just really sneaky. And there's like, apparently they have like some airdrops and stuff in the middle of it. And in the end, everybody's expected to take a loss pretty much. And when the final payout comes, it's paying half to the sole winner of the key at the end of this. And then the other half goes to I think their team, if I'm not mistaken. And it got really complicated while I was reading through it, because I think those rules even are different per team. But it's just such a elaborate combination of so many little like fish hooks of behavioral incentives, so that even everybody who knows they're getting scammed, as long as they scam 10 more people, then maybe they'll make out even. And as long as they get their team to win and get more people on their team, maybe they'll get half of their money back. And it just a constant, like, if just, it's not surprising reading all the wiki and like how it happens that this would go to $9 million or $12 million worth of coins locked up in this smart contract. And that's the other thing, is that this is a smart contract, so it's not even really dependent on the website. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to, I guess you could say, interface with it without the website. But I'm just meaning that this could just run openly on the Ethereum network, and it is. It's a smart contract on the Ethereum network, and so it's kind of like an automated black hole of crypto capital. And I'm not even 100% sure. It looks like the payouts aren't even really to the FOMO3D. I mean, I'm sure they're making a lot of money somehow. But it doesn't seem to show in the wiki where, unless they're like automatic dividend holders at the beginning of this, so they're just making percentages of every key that everybody buys. Who knows? But it's just really interesting because, like, just like Matt Stevenson kind of details out in his article, the solution to a game theory incentive problem is a game theoretic response. And trying to shut down the game essentially before it gets started. But this really kind of brings, I feel like this is actually a microcosm of and kind of those baby steps we're moving toward basically automated scams and essentially bot-based malware that Andreas has talked about. That, I mean, obviously we have bot-based malware all the time, like, but I'm talking about one that is self-sustaining and takes advantage of incentives and behaviors by making its own little economy, like internal economy of processes and exploitation. And but Andreas talks about it, that you could have a smart contract bot essentially that offered up bounties for people who figured out, who programmers and hackers paid them to figure out how to get around security measures, and offering up dividends in their the success of the virus to programmers and hackers who are willing to make repairs and improve it. And that it's just this thing that exists out there kind of in the ether that everybody's having to deal with. It becomes a behavioral or economic, like, virus or disease. It's just really, really fascinating. It's just designed to soak up everybody's money and does a pretty good job at it. But this is just something that's a really, really cool concept. And a thank you to Matt Stevenson for writing this. Because as soon as I heard about FOMO3D, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this is kind of that next step in the scams. And unfortunately, this is not going away. I think we'll continue to see these things evolve, and we should, or at least it's important that we discuss them and come up with game theoretic ways to counter them or shut them down before they get started, basically. But I just could not avoid talking about it. The game theory that it's taking advantage of, and the idea of it itself, I just thought it was really, really interesting, and figured you guys would like it too. So with that, though, we'll go ahead and just close this one here. Don't forget to check out Matt Stevenson. I'll be sure to link to his Twitter and the Medium page and the Hacker Noon publication in general, just so you can check out his other work. Read that second part of the article if you want to dig a little bit more deeply into this. And don't forget to applaud Matt Stevenson's article on Medium if you enjoyed listening to it on the show. I am not going to link to the FOMO3D website, however, because I don't want everybody running over there thinking they're going to make a lot of money, because you're not, as I think this article and the commentary afterward made pretty clear. But just in case, I'm not going to make it any easier. So, yeah, if you want to follow me, I am at The Crypto Economy on both Twitter and Medium. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes if you want to keep hearing about all the cool stuff going on in the crypto economy, the new concepts, the new problems, the new technology, the history, everything about the crypto economy. You can find it here on the Crypto Economy Podcast, and share it with everybody you know who loves Bitcoin and crypto too. If you would like to donate to the show, I will always have my Bitcoin address available, both in the show notes and in the Twitter post. And it would be much, much appreciated if anybody's able to give a couple bucks. It really goes a long way and helps me keep this thing running for as long as I can possibly manage it. And also, if you have not gotten your hardware wallet, I encourage you to do so, regardless of whether or not you use my affiliate link. If you have a substantial amount of Bitcoin or a consequential at all amount of crypto, I cannot urge you enough to get a hardware wallet. It is the safest place to keep your Bitcoin. So if you are getting around to grabbing a Trezor at some point, please use my affiliate link, and at no cost to you, you'll send a couple of bucks to help out the show. With that, though, we will close this here. Thank you so much for listening to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I will catch everyone tomorrow with another episode. And until then, take it easy, guys.